Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the evolving world of sports science. I'm Andrew Rizza, an athlete trainer with decades of experience in professional, collegiate, and high school sports.
And I'm Cameron Roth, an orthopedic surgeon and a consultant for the Chicago White Sox.
In each episode, we'll explore the real-world challenges and opportunities facing today's human performance professionals.
Our hands-on experience is transforming sports medicine and breaking barriers through innovation and teamwork.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. We're at the Harvard Varsity Club with Isaiah Kazavinsky. Isaiah is a Harvard University alum, football player, retired NFL player, and he is now a co-founder of Will Ventures. Isaiah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
At Harvard, you achieved remarkable success, first-team All-American, multi-Ivy League honors, and Harvard Male Athlete of the Year. What drove your excellence on and off the field?
Well, that's a multi-layered question, but I think a lot of it starts with how I grew up and early parts of my childhood. I grew up in upstate New York, right outside Binghamton, New York, and grew up in poverty. Was the youngest of five kids, but grew up in poverty. We were homeless for two big parts of our childhood, living in a tent. And some of my earliest memories when I was little was, my family's not going to live like this. Like, I don't want to live like this. My family's not going to live like this. And that was something that drove me in a lot of different ways. And that always stuck with me. I would say my mom, who had been, you know, my entire life, just an amazing woman. She passed away when I was in high school, but she had a very tough childhood. She grew up in an orphanage for the first 13 years of her life, failed two grades in high school, graduated high school when she was over 20 years old. Later found out she was diagnosed with dyslexia. No one had diagnosed it. Amazing woman, huge heart, but she knew the way out for us kids was put books in our hands. And she put books in our hands when that's some of my earliest memories as well, which is going to the library. You have to pick out books. You have to have, she did a 6-hour reading Sunday, every Sunday. And we read and read. And she's like, you can read anything you want, but you got to read. Yeah. So I really gravitated towards biographies and comics. So I would go in between both those. And the biographies really started to show me. I started to read, about athletes, about successful people, period. And this pattern emerged for me that, for all of those successful people, is like the common thread here is how hard they worked. They were willing to sacrifice a lot and control their own destiny. But that was the secret sauce, how hard they wanted to work. And that was, to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like an absolute awakening. And my mom always did a great job, and my dad as well, of letting us know like how amazing this country is. It's not perfect, but for the most part, you can control your own destiny and, how hard you want to work, everything else. That was an amazing piece. And I would say the last big motivating piece when I was little, growing up, another amazing thing my mom did. When we did have a house, we had a record player. We didn't have a TV or anything, but we had a record player, and my mom would play Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech once a week for us. She'd sit us down and she'd play it, and it made a massive imprint on me when I was young, me and my siblings. And it really put us, growing up, understanding why she did it, thinking about it more of like, for us to like realize there's a lot of people in the world that are hurting. And it also put us in a mindset of like not feeling sorry for ourselves, right? That those two pieces were on top of all of that, but this idea of the world needs more love, period. And it was very grounding for us kids very early on, great lessons across the board, but those were motivating pieces for me and like really, really never left me. And going through kind of every single process, having to like make up this big decision early on, like sports and academics being my way out, and really had this kind of inkling of all these things moving around, but really had this epiphany when I was 14 years old. And I knew I was a wrestler, I was a football player in track, but I didn't make the varsity football team my freshman year of high school. And I remember being just absolutely dejected, and I wanted to make the varsity football team, didn't, and remember going home, eating dinner, doing work, and then going to bed and like tossing and turning, just being unbelievably upset. like 11 o'clock, midnight, you know, 2 in the morning. And all of a sudden it hit me like a lightning bolt. I had this like complete epiphany of like, oh my gosh, you did not work hard enough. You didn't work hard enough to look back with no regrets. Like that was all on myself. And that moment really changed everything for me. And I woke up the next morning, made a sign, said, let no one outwork you today. And put it over my bed, and I still have it. My son has it now, which is kind of cool. He asked for it when we got old enough. But that was something, you know, really, really. I felt like Scrooge. It was still Christmas morning, yeah. And I just went to every day, like in sports, in academics, everything I could. I took it day by day, but tried to work unbelievably hard, right, as hard as I possibly could. If I didn't understand something in school, I'd raise my hand 20 times. I'd be like a kid in class. All the time. I'd meet teachers at their classroom as early as I possibly could, you know, go to like 5:30 a.m. lift, meet their teachers at the room, get help before school, help after school, go to school, do all work, wake up again, do it all the next day. That was a long-winded answer of like, that set the tone for, you know, looking up, being at Harvard, which was like another crazy story, and then really getting back to those same basics when I got to Harvard. Because Harvard challenged me in an entirely different way. Sorry, same ways, but even more intense.
Yeah.
Part of that was like what I put on myself, right? I knew I wanted to play in the NFL, and I knew Harvard was not a football factory. I told Coach Murphy that when I got here, that if I work hard enough, I want to get a shot at the NFL. And I told him that as a freshman when I came here. He's like, absolutely, you're going to have to put that work in, but I'm here for you, and yeah. I'm here to support you on that journey. Those are something really important for me, but like both my backup plan was to be a doctor if I did make it in the NFL. So I was a pre-med undergrad here.
As one does, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what he tried to do out of
Washington. Yeah. My backup plan was to play in the NFL.
That, like for me, like Coach Murphy's jaw almost dropped when I told him that. Yeah. He had a similar reaction, which was a massive strain on my time. I always like to say, between football, the pre-med stuff, held down, four jobs just because no money was coming from home. Really lived the life of a hermit here for 4 years, but it challenged me in so many ways, grew and tested myself a lot as well. So I'll kind of end there. There's a lot more, but like that kind of really set the stage of like why and the motivating factors early that kind of led. And always trying to find a way against odds, has been like a fun journey like through life thus far. And I want to continue to be able to do that.
My backup plan was no backup plan.
Plan A and then no other plan after.
And I have to say, I've known you for a lot of years, man. And I like that defines you. Like, and I saw that in your son and even your daughter. Like, no one was outworking them ever.
I love it.
Ever. And you would see
that makes you more proud than anything.
Field, like grinding. Isaiah was up there running patterns, like grinding. And that's what they did. And they got that from you. So that's hats off to you, man.
I appreciate you saying that, but that's all them. We've always told the kids, this is not dad's story. This is not mom's story. This is your story. And didn't ever want to put pressure on them early. You got to figure out, you don't have to play a sport, but academics, number one, like you gotta put work into that. Like that's just the way. You don't have to play a sport, but if you do, don't half-ass it.
Yeah.
You gotta go all the way, but find something you're passionate about. And just unbelievably proud of the kids. They grew up a lot differently than me, and I was conflicted in a lot of different ways. Even married my high school sweetheart, and she had been with me through that entire journey for that. But conflicted even before having kids. Like, oh my gosh, like this realization. I'm like, my kids, and I've talked to a lot of different people that had come from tougher backgrounds and then, provided, and they're like, oh my gosh, like changed the trajectory here. But my kids have different aspects around that, and really thought a lot about the kids growing up, and they've been unbelievably grateful. They've always like asked like amazing questions about my story, about the family's history and story as well, and appreciate kind of the journey. And one thing that realization, even like thinking about before the kids and then after the kids, where it doesn't, and having met so many different people across so many different walks of life, you just got to figure out like whether you're kind of rich, you're poor, it doesn't matter. How hard are you willing to work and how passionate can you be about what you want to do?
Yeah.
And that's what we like preach to the kids, like it's from an early age, and it's not going to necessarily happen overnight and be able to do that. But like that as parents, both Laura and I are like unbelievably proud of that. So I appreciate you saying that.
Our live episodes at the Harvard University Varsity Club are brought to you by our friends at MetOne Orthopedics. Are you looking for innovation in orthopedics? Meet the only U.S.-based Latin-owned manufacturer now leading the way in upper and lower extremity solutions. They've just expanded their portfolio with the newly launched Fortis Distal Radius Plating System, cleared and designed for next-level performance. This isn't just progress. It's representation, precision, and results all in one.
So you grew up in rural New York, poverty, episodes of homelessness, and then you've become wildly successful, Harvard, NFL, venture capital, beautiful family. Did you have any role models growing up?
Well, first, I appreciate the kind words. And yeah, it's been like just one foot in front of the other kind of journey. Like kind of look back where it's been like just wild. And I still feel like there's something big to be done. Yeah, for me, growing up, reading books and then told you that story, I would say the two figures I gravitated towards, Dan Gable, who is one of the best wrestlers of all time, whose methodology was, you know, he's a four-time, you know, national champion. And I like, unbelievable. Like, the guy is an absolute legend. But his thing was he was willing to outwork everybody. And that was, like, I felt like kindred spirit having seen that. And then same mentality, same willingness to lay everything on the line as Walter Payton. I would say those two early on were just huge influences on me. I've never met both. Like, yeah, obviously Walter Payton's passed away now, but like never got a chance to meet him or anyone else. But like, I held on to that, right? And always held on. And I know Dan Gable always used to like talk about, always think about a competitor like training when he was sleeping, when he was resting. It's like them training. So you, I probably like did that almost to the extreme where you continue to, you know, almost kind of overwork in some ways, and really had to try to find balance going through college and then into the NFL. But long-winded answer on two people. And I would say like the men and women around sports. If I didn't find sports, you know, organized sports in middle school and to high school and to college, the men and women around the sports have been just absolutely amazing and shaped everything about me. Love not only football, I love all sports. Just the ultimate teacher. This country has embraced organized sports as cultural essential and something that's just been an amazing teacher for this country across the board, because it is a microcosm of life, right? You're going to have the chips down. Things aren't going to go perfect. You got to stay steady and you got to persevere.
Being an NFL player, we had recently interviewed Dr. James Andrews, who is one of the most profound orthopedic surgeons. And a lot of athletes had gotten to see him when he was practicing medicine. When you were playing in the NFL, you played for about 8 years in the league, and then you had a couple of knee injuries. When you went and sought out Dr. Andrews for an opinion, when did that discussion come up with you and him that it might be time for you to retire out of the NFL?
Dr. Andrews is amazing. First met him when I was getting a second opinion on a knee injury towards the end of my career. I won't get into the details, but like second opinion was definitely needed. And I knew it. You could barely walk. And ended up seeing him, was in surgeries less than 24 hours later. And Dr. Andrews is, you know, a legend in this space. Amazing person. Has done a lot of amazing work kind of pushing the sports medicine, obviously orthopedics, forward in a major way. And, you know, it was important for me get his advice to, you know, have the surgery, had microfracture surgery, which essentially ended up being kind of, it's a kiss of death for a lot of players, right? If you, mm-hmm. if you're microfracture surgery, I mean, you know, you guys know this in a lot of different ways, but that kind of realization didn't come over time. You know, that recovery from microfracture, you have to be non-weight bearing for, you know, 16 weeks. And I still wanted to come back for my ninth year to play, and was diligent on, you know, rehabilitation, everything else. But you had a discussion with Dr. Andrews towards the end of that rehabilitation, like trying to come through. It never felt like itself again. And trying to come through and push for that ninth year. My goal forever was to get to 10 years play. Like that's what I wanted to play. That was just like a number in my head. Like, yeah, I thought it was just a cool number. I used to play 10 years. I remember like the last meeting I had with Dr. Andrews down in Birmingham, you know, kind of walk in and, you know, he's got his, you know, Southern drawl and he's like, listen, Kaz, he's like, I think it's time to hang up the cleats. and he went, he's like, listen, he's like, just go do something with that Harvard degree.
Yeah.
He's like, you can gut out, you know, maybe a couple years more. But he's like, your knee is going to be absolutely shredded. You got two young kids, like, you want to be able to function, be able to move. Just think about that. He's like, that you can do whatever you want, but like, that's my advice. And he was right. I mean, you know, I thought about it. You know, talked to my wife about it. It was a, you know, hard decision for me, but you know, made a decision to step away. And yeah, ironically, my other knee needs a knee replacement right now because I compensated on the other side for a while as well. But anyway, that was, you know, kind of one of the moments, and I'm sure he's had to have a lot of those discussions with a lot of players over the years. But that was the end of my career.
Coffin.
It was, and like honestly, I'm like so hard headed, and like I just would have like, all right, I'm just gonna gut it out. If I did not have that advice, I'm just gonna gut it out. I'm gonna like ride this thing till the wheels fall off. And he gave me like some perspective, and it was great. And that's, you know, by that time, this is a, you know, another story kind of weaving in, but I, you know, started angel investing when I was playing. So by the time I retired, I decided I didn't want to be a doctor. Although there's a lot of things about sports medicine, medicine in general that I love and I'm passionate about, but I was like, I want to get into venture capital. So started studying for the GMAT, and in that process, getting ready, eventually ended up me getting my MBA at Harvard Business School. But he put me in that path, in that motion of like, what was next? I mean, he's like, you know, this is a small window in your life. Like, he goes, I know it feels big because it's been a big chunk of your life for a long time. But being able to have that next step, which I'd always thought of, I'd always prepared for, but again, I always wanted to get that 10 years, didn't get there.
So we interviewed Dominique Foxworth, former NFL cornerback, former president of the NFL Players Association, and also graduate of Harvard Business School. I know you know him personally. What's your relationship with him, and what do you think he's done for the NFLPA?
Dominique's a beast. I mean, Dominique is an amazing human being, individual, unbelievably thoughtful, unbelievably smart. And, you know, I'm able to see him for sure every single, yeah, the kind of all the events leading up to the Super Bowl every single year, I'm able to see him. And then still, he's obviously still very involved with a lot of the NFLPA. And I still sit on the, you know, Mackie White committee there, which is the NFLPA health and safety, shows up on that as well. But Dominique is widely respected and absolute machine.
So you're involved with the NFL Players Association, the medical side of things, health and safety. How'd you get involved in it? And then what does that do for current and past players?
So the Mackie White Committee set up, you know, really kind of think of it as the NFLPA Health and Safety Committee, really to help think about the game and the health of the players, first and foremost. And it's a blend of just amazing, you know, technologists, doctors, scientists, researchers, and former players, right? And then some current players as well, and that shift over. So you want that great blend around all of that coming together. It's been an amazing, I think it's been around, I think going on 15 years now, maybe even longer. And DeMar Smith set it up, and with, you know, kind of really his lead, Sean Sansevieri, was a former Cornell football player. And was D's number two for a long time, but he really kind of led the charge on pulling that together. But really kind of an amazing initiative, and comes together in person annually, but like there's also other items in between the year on like the biggest items across the board of like, how do we help with recovery? How do we help prevent injury? You know, all the aspects you want to think about, you know, pain management, like everything kind of around player health and safety you can think about. You know, from field turf as well, you look at kind of data, different types of turf around the NFL, playing surfaces, you know, really cover it all. So it's exhaustive on every front, and it's great to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's good for players, player safety, and the future of the players and the future of the NFL, I would say.
100%.
Speaking of health and wellness, can you talk about your involvement with the Concussion Legacy Foundation and your decision to donate your brain to BU's School of Medicine?
Yeah, so that one's an interesting story that I'll keep abridged, but while I was still an NFL player, my former roommate at Harvard, Chris Nowinski, who's the founder of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, he had transitioned out, was a WWE wrestler. His stage name was Chris Harvard, which is funny. He played what Vince McMahon like created the character, and he played a heel, you know, bad guy.
Yeah, of course.
And his character was, you know, this Ivy League snob that like looked down on everyone. And Chris was kind of, I'd say, kind of like built for the role. He was, you know, high school football captain and lead in West Side Story, right?
Yeah.
In high school. Like, I was like, if you look back, you're like, well, he's kind of built for the WWE.
Yeah.
And he had his career cut short. Long story short, he had his career cut short with concussions, you know, several of them back to back. Even though people think, you know, wrestling, you know, professional wrestling on that side, sometimes it's not perfect to not take a big blow, right? And that can happen, you know, pretty frequently. So it's, you know, very, very rough and tumble sport. He went on this journey, ended up writing a book. He's unbelievably smart. Like, Chris is like a 1590 SAT guy, like really, really smart. Ended up writing a book on this and, you know, repetitive head trauma, eventually led to really trying to develop ways to gather research and let research over time tell a story, looking at CTE, and started the Brain Bank at Boston University, which is, you know, really the epicenter for looking at brains postmortem for CTE, and the Concussion Legacy Foundation in tandem, which is kind of really the awareness arm, nonprofit awareness arm around that. And, you know, Chris has really made it like his destiny. He could work in a hedge fund, he could be working anywhere, and has really made it like his life's mission to be able to kind of focus on that. I do not see eye to eye with Chris on everything, but one thing I do agree with him on is letting data speak over time. And one of the things that was important to me, I'm an organ donor already. Mm-hmm. To your question around, you know, donating my brain, when he had first asked me, when he was coming up with this idea, and I went back, like, talking to my wife, like, thinking about it. I was like, I don't want to donate my brain. I was like, well, why wouldn't I? Like, I'm an organ donor, and this game has been such an important part of me. I want it to survive and thrive. I want to be able to donate my brain to science. So that's what I did. I was actually the first one. Chris tells a very interesting story and funny story that, if you look back on, like, the press clippings, it was Ted Johnson that was. He's like, oh, yeah. So we're going to do this press release. Even though you're number one, you're like 1A. because it's just better marketing with Ted.
Of course.
But, you know, all jokes aside, you know, did that because you believe in data and science. And really, like, you look at that, you know, across sports, you just want your data to lead the way on, like, and what's really happened, it's really got to, like, land in the middle is, like, the wild, wild west of, like, it didn't matter. Or there was like some small few in the medical industry that was like, you know, trying to wave a flag, and then went, you know, kind of swing the other way. It's got to land in the middle. How do you take care of the low hanging fruit? You know, reducing exposure in practice, you know, not only in football, but like, you know, across sports as well. So there's a lot to be done. But the solution is not getting rid of football. The solution is, or any other sport, it's how do you actually change them to make them, you know, such a positive experience for everyone long-term and as safe as possible for all the players as well.
As the father of a college football player, what advice do you give to your son?
I played a key role, both kids, coaching them early on. And I think that was like pretty important. That idea on reducing exposure in practice. I mean, you look back, like bodies of data that show like a lifetime of a football player, regardless of how long you play. In the old days, like, 85 to 90% of your exposure was during practice mm-hmm. of, you know, you kind of hits to the head, exposure, which is like, that's got to like, I don't have to practice like hitting my head against the wall to get good at like hitting my head against the wall. It's like, you don't have to do that. Once now you have enough to be able to practice fast and everything across the board. And all those kind of rules have changed. But like he's, you know, preached to him like since he's been little on tackling the right way, you know, tackling with good technique, not leading with your head, which is like, honestly, that's one of the biggest culprits. And it's not easy to do all the time across the board for everything, but that's it. And yeah, I know the coaches that he's always played for from, you know, obviously coaching him younger to middle school to high school all the way here have really been aligned. And it really speaks to like the changes that have happened too. And it's very much the same way, right? Kind of reducing exposure. Like Harvard does an amazing job. I would say the entire Ivy League too. And across the board has done an amazing job of taking care of that low hanging fruit, reducing exposure in practice.
If you could meet your 18-year-old self today, what advice or message would you give him?
It's a good question. I would say through the entire journey, enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tough to do. I was like running, like I wouldn't, I guess you could even define it as scared in a lot of ways, because I was just so, so worried. That burden of poverty was like so strong, and it like, I'd put such like high expectations. But knew like you had to like, there has to be ways to like survive every day. And you have to take enjoyment out of every single day and have fun. Like I, even on that sign, like I knew that I went back and revised, like it said, let no one outwork you today on that sign I put above my bed, but I actually ended up putting parentheses in the bottom, said, but have fun.
Yeah.
And like tried to like do that. I didn't necessarily follow my own advice, like from when I was, if I'm talking to my 18-year-old self, I didn't follow that advice all the time, knowing that it's not, there's going to be like peaches and roses, like all, you know, all the time, but just taking time to enjoy that journey. Stops every once in a while to be like, oh my gosh, you've come this far. You still got more to go. But like enjoying that, I've learned over time, like that has been great, and wish I would have been able to enjoy that a little more along the way. But I share that with the kids all the time. I like try to enjoy the journey. You know, you're gonna work hard, and success is sometimes like unbelievably like lonely path. But just try to stop and enjoy it every once in a while, and give yourself grace when you can as well, right? Knowing you can't be perfect across the board. That's another thing I'd tell my 18-year-old self.
Yeah.
Any players you looked up to in the NFL?
Yeah, I would say a lot. I mean, I had a lot of amazing teammates and a lot of people I, you know, widely respected. You know, one of the things I always like to do is to be the first guy in, last guy out all the time. And to see other people like that, they were doing that with me, like the John Randalls of the world. You guys remember him? He's mm-hmm. a Hall of Famer now. Unbelievably intense. I would say one of the most intense. He's top two. So John Randall's like tied for the most intense person that I've ever known. Brings it every single day. Like 5 a.m. brings it, like yeah. energy, everything else, until he like leaves the building. Other one was Brendan Bibro, who you know, yeah. and he was the only two-time Harvard football captain. Unbelievably intense person, former wrestler as well.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first people I met when I took my recruiting visit here. Just an amazing person. But I would say Matt Hasselbeck, who's still a very, very close friend, was an amazing person. I looked up, always did things the right way. Just an unbelievable, like, great way about him as well. Just an amazing family. His father just passed away. It was like unbelievably sad. But yeah, Walter Jones, another Hall of Famer tackle for us in Seattle. Just amazing person. Lucky enough to play with Jerry Rice, who was like, you know, childhood idol.
That's really cool.
It was amazing. Like, it was just awesome. And he was his 20th year. And yeah. Jerry, like, look over in the morning, getting their first Jerry Rice, like showing up 20th year. And I was like, holy cow. And like yeah. leaving at night, like Jerry's like, oh my Jerry's gosh, there. This is like, this is amazing. And you could tell like he had done it his entire life. He wasn't going to stop doing that. So it was really cool. But anyway, those are some examples.
Those are great examples.
No,
those are really great examples.
What role did Coach Murphy play in your life?
Coach Murphy has been was, is, will be forever, holds such a special place in my heart. He is a father figure to me in so many different ways. Still talk to him, touch base with him monthly. I've done that since I've been playing. Such an amazing individual, and changed my life. And I tell him that all the time. I tell him I love him, and he changed my life. He's always been there for me. You know, he plucked this, you know, this kid that had nothing, sitting down, you know, our, you know, 700 square foot house, no heat on, sitting at the table. And I didn't, as a young kid, I just didn't know how much Harvard would mean. It all didn't make sense to me. And he's like, listen, if you choose Harvard, you're never going to regret that. He's like, you're never, ever going to regret that. And he said that, those words have like always stuck with me, but he was 100% right. Like, I just didn't have, you know, the guidance and everything else, but like this, you know, kid with a reverse mullet, which is like a crazy haircut, redhead, reverse mullet, yeah, showing up on campus, my 10 speed, I bought a 10 speed at like $10 10 speed garage sale. My wife bought for me, my girlfriend at the time, you know, wife now, bought it for me, tire popped. I was like, well, I can't afford another one. I ripped the tire off. It was just sparks, sparks flying on the front, awesome, going through Harvard Yard. Yeah. People were like, this dude's a psycho.
Yeah.
This dude is crazy.
Yeah.
And I ended up winning the starting job, like showed up here. Coach Murphy knew, right? I showed up, I was a safety in high school.
Yeah.
I was like 200 pounds, safety in high school, running back, punter, kick returner, like the whole deal. Showed up here, look at strong safety on the depth chart. Like literally show up at camp freshman year, like strong safety, nothing, free safety. I was like, okay, where, like
linebacker,
middle linebacker, fifth on the depth chart. I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And yeah, I've talked to him. My dad's like, if you look, my dad, the during that time, he was like 330 pounds. So he's like, yeah, this guy's probably got some room to run here.
Yeah, right.
In my body, like, that's the thing. I'd worked unbelievably hard in, like, in high school and, you know, but I had never been able to match that with the right nutrition. So when I came here, my body exploded.
Yeah.
You know, gained 40 pounds my freshman year. You know, went from 205 to 245 in freshman year. Wow. And it was like, I was shooting myself in the foot because I was, like, working, breaking down, but not being able to replace. And it was the first time I had access to meals, nutrition, you know, protein, you know, like a blend of like everything, which is amazing. But like after, you know, ended up, you know, at fifth on the depth chart, by the time that we kicked off the season 4 weeks later, I'd won the starting job and never looked back.
Yeah.
You know, played 40 games here. But Coach Murphy putting that trust into me, being someone that, you know, his eyes bugged out of his head when I told him I want to be, yeah, freshman interview, exit interview. He's like, the pre-med thing? He's like, wait, what? He's like, all right, that's going to take a tremendous amount of work as well. You're going to have a lot on your plate. But always been there every single step of the way. And I can't say enough about Coach Murphy and his wife, Martha, and entire family. They've been such special people to me and my entire family.
That's great.
Special teams captain for the Seattle Seahawks. How does that role differ as opposed to being a more visible, high-profile leader of the team, whether you're on offense or defense?
I think everyone's got their own style. Like, it was a great honor. I was, you know, three-time captain in Seattle when I was there, one of the captains of their first Super Bowl team. And I wouldn't say I was never like a rah-rah guy, and everyone's got different styles and everyone's got different leadership styles, I think, to your question as well. And to me, I always thought like the most powerful is like lead by example, right? And that, by the way, that ding, like that speaks to like when I first got there, like the players I could feel, and I know I've talked to them since, like the players are like, this fucking rich kid from Harvard.
Little like, do they know.
Yeah. Silver spoon, nerd, like the whole, and I knew, like I could feel that when I got there, and I was like, all right, time is going to be on my side, right? When I, you know, time's gonna be able to tell this story, right? Which is like, you bring a lunch pail every day,
yeah,
and you get after it. And that's the habit. Like, I had to slowly, like, work people. I was like, this guy is like, not a joke. This is so important to this guy. The other thing on like, people that come from the Ivy League, Harvard in particular, I think everyone scouts, and this is kind of a risk like everyone has coming out. I think it's like, well, this kid's smart. He's going to have a lot of options. Is football that important to him? It's like, is it like a, you know, second or third on his? And like football had always been like my number one, mm-hmm. right? I mean, outside of people, everything, like it always been my baby. And I always treated it like that as well. So it was like that piece kind of winning over. And the Seahawks had done their research, but like the players didn't know. So that starting out like that and then being that's something that's voted on by the players tremendous honor. And to earn the respect of your teammates for 3 years and be able to do that was an awesome experience. And like all that stuff carries over what I do now, right? Like, you know, having retired, gone to business school, been an entrepreneur twice over, now in our third fund for Will Ventures, leading a team of 10 people across, you know, Boston, New York, San Francisco, LA. That same style is the same. It's like lead by example. And best ideas win kind of across the board where we look at our business now. But like that idea of leadership style and is really, really important to me.
Love it.
Final question. You're famously on Oprah Winfrey's show. What's Oprah like?
That was a pretty crazy experience. She was amazing. Like, very few people in my life have ever been, like, in awe of. And she had just amazing presence. Was able to spend, you know, 10, 15 minutes in the green room with just me and her talking. Was, like, just blown away. And, you know, kind of almost had to pinch myself in a lot of ways. But she was unbelievably kind, unbelievably understanding, unbelievably smart. Seeing how much information she had to consume, like, and I wasn't the only person, and being able to do that and keep all of that in her head and be able to deliver after, I mean, the night before she had flown in late, I think she had 2 to 3 hours of sleep as well. Like all of this on like very, very minimal. I was like blown away, and she was very much motivated by the things that were motivating me, you know, in some ways on this idea, like the burden of poverty, right? And everyone's got, you know, kind of different stories around that, but like that central theme, you know, never leaves you, right? And it's really, really part of your DNA and who you are. And not that you run away from it, but like keep it at bay.
How did that come about? How did you end up getting on the show?
One of her producers had seen a story when we had gone to the Super Bowl. And so there's a couple things. The NFL Films had done a piece on my journey, you know, from, you know, poverty and being homeless to Harvard, then to the NFL. And it was released, but then really, like, the year we made the Super Bowl, it was made the year prior. They had then, leading up to the Super Bowl, they had played that several times. And then there was some, you know, press that came out as well. So they had seen those materials and they reached out. I think they reached out initially through the Seahawks, and then they got to me, and they had a discussion around that as well. But
pretty amazing experience.
Very thorough. Like, yeah. They do their job, like, on research, on, like, you know, what's real, what's not real, like, the whole deal. Right. Being able to have gone through it, it's like, oh, this is actually, like, a real story. Like,
yeah.
Let's go do it. Yeah. So it was pretty cool. It was like, amazing experience. Like, Lauren was there with me, my father, who's now, by the way, my dad. He is 36 years sober today, and such an amazing person, able to, and I was the youngest of those five, and able to enjoy such an amazing life with him, where he's tried to heal kind of transgressions he's had. And it's been amazing to see that, you know, him with the grandkids across the board, with, you know, obviously my kids and all my siblings' kids. And it's been amazing. To see that and be sober for as long as he has, it's been really cool.
That's great. Well, Isaiah, thanks, man.
Congratulations.
You're a great friend. I appreciate you coming on.
Riz, I appreciate you having
this
me.
This is awesome.
Yeah,
man.
You guys were fantastic.
Appreciate it.
Great.
We're just very well prepared here.
We're gonna grab a quick picture. And get you your tailgate so you got some hot dogs.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Not a big hot dog guy.
No.
Steak tips.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Follow us on social media and check out our website.
The information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice.
please consult a licensed healthcare provider for guidance related to your specific situation. We'll see you next week.